before, I guess we've often all wondered, what has President Obama been doing since he left the White House? And, of course, besides campaigning for the Biden-Harris team, he's been writing a memoir. And the book is titled A Promised Land. The first volume of the memoir is currently, without a doubt, the number one best-selling book in the nation. So let's get to it, ladies and gentlemen. He's here today. Please welcome to the show our president, President Barack Obama.
How you doing, man?
How you doing, sir? You good?
Hey, I hope you had a good Thanksgiving.
Man, I ate everything that I ate stuff I had no business eating.
Well, you know, that's what you do on Thanksgiving. We had four pies, and I somehow felt obliged to taste every one of them. and then had a little trouble sleeping. You know, it's funny how that works.
Oh, you did that to yourself.
Oh, man, you know, but hey, if you can't do it on Thanksgiving, when are you going to do it?
No, for real. I wait all year for that. Hey, listen, look, before I get started, man, we miss you. We didn't know how good we had it. We just didn't. And we know now. We'll get into that, but let's talk about A Promised Land. First volume of your memoir. Right now, everybody, it's available in print and audio book. And the book, The Promised Land, covers your historic campaign in 2008 and all the major events during your first time as president. Tell us, what was the inspiration for doing a memoir now?
Well, look, I started shortly after I left office. And, you know, because I had written two books before, I felt obliged to write it myself. And you know, I'm a slow writer because there was a lot of stuff to write about. And you know, I always wanted to tell a story that allowed people to see behind the curtain of the presidency, to understand not just the policy, but also the personal, to understand, you know, how it had an impact on me and Michelle in terms of our marriage, how our kids adjusted to it, all the amazing people, you know, who helped us behind the scenes, and, you know, who sometimes don't get the credit for the work that helps to get, you know, a health care bill passed or, you know, to be able to get bin Laden. And you know, hopefully, you know, especially young people who read this, who may be asking themselves, how can I have an impact? How can I make a difference? You know, they'll have the ability to kind of read this and get a little bit of a roadmap about, how all this stuff works.
Wow. When did you first get the notion? I've always wondered this. When did you first get the notion that you could be president?
You know, look, as I described, you know, I started off in public life as a community organizer. Mm-hmm. And I was a little skeptical about politics. And so was Michelle, by the way. and it was really sort of an experiment when I first ran in the state legislature. Let's see how much of a difference I can make doing this. And, you know, then I ran for the U.S. Senate, and I won the nomination. Mm-hmm. I think it wasn't until I spoke at the Democratic National Convention in 2004. Mm. I knew it was a good speech, but it really blew up.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the speech, you know, where I talked about the audacity of hope and, you know, I think really burst on the national scene. And the way it resonated, you know, I describe in the book just that kind of sense you have sometimes when you know you're connecting with an audience. And that audience was, you know, millions of people around the country who had tuned in. At that point, the chatter starts picking up. Even by the time I arrived at the Senate, I'm a brand new senator, but people were already talking about, you know, all right, this is somebody who could potentially run at some point. But even then, I didn't think I was going to run right away. And I think it was a combination of timing. I had opposed the war in Iraq, which, you know, made me somewhat unique among, you know, the major candidates or potential candidates. And that's where the Democratic Party was moving. You know, so a little bit a combination of being in the right place at the right time with the message that resonated with people.
Wow. Yeah, you know, man, I appreciate you saying that because I've always been curious about that, how that notion can even come about. It's such a big step. You were talking earlier about how living in the White House affected your family life. In the book now, because you go into this in depth in The Promised Land, you talk about Michelle and your daughters and how living in the White House affected them. Okay, Mr. President, hold on one second. We'll be right back. Sit tight. We got more with President Barack Obama right after this.
You're listening to the Steve Harvey Morning Show.
All right, we're back, everybody. We're talking with our president, President Barack Obama. You were talking earlier about how living in the White House affected your family life. In the book now, because you go into this in depth in The Promised Land, you talk about Michelle and your daughters and how living in the White House affected them. You even share how you had moments of self-doubt and disappointment, you know, and I'm pretty sure you're trying to juggle all this in the family. What can people pick up from this book through all of this discussion about the family life in the White House?
I think that if people look at the stories, it's a reminder, number one, the president, the first lady, or, you know, in some future administration, maybe the first gentleman, right? Kamala Harris is there, so her husband, he's going to start a new tradition there. Yeah, the kids, in our case, it had been a while since there were young kids in the White House. You know, it's still a family with the same family dynamics, right? And trying to balance work and family life. And, you know, the girls, as they were growing up, you know, trying to figure out, all right, how can we hang out with our friends without, you know, dealing with Secret Service, you know, looking over our shoulder every minute. And, you know, so some of it is just a reminder that it is a family in a weird situation, but it's still just a family. And I think part of what I also try to reflect in the book is all the amazing people who behind the scenes are helping us do what we do. You know, I spend some time describing the butlers in the White House, all of them African-American or Hispanic. Most of them older, you know, they reminded me of Michelle's uncles, you know, and Malia and Sasha reminded them of their grandkids. And, you know, many of them, you know, arrived at the White House when it was unimaginable that there would ever be a black family in the White House. And, you know, sort of the love and concern and care that they showed towards us. You know, that I think is also something we wanted to make sure was featured in the book.
You know, that's really unique because, you know, people talk to me and they talk about, you know, we talk about different problems. They go, man, that's rich boy problems you got. But when you're the president of the United States, that's a whole nother level. That's not, that's beyond most people's comprehension. All right, Mr. President, if you could hang on just one more time for me. We want to get the rest of this great interview. We're talking with President Barack Obama. We'll be right back with more with our man, our friend, right after this.
You're listening to the Steve Harvey Morning Show.
All right, we're back again, and our special guest this morning is our distinguished 44th president, 44th, 45th, all that. Wish he still was. Personal statement I don't have to make. But back to the interview. you got a family, you got these kids, and like you say, you're trying to create a normal existence for them. But how? How? You're the president of the United States' daughter.
Sometimes people ask, you know, what are the greatest accomplishment of your presidency? Yeah, I always say that the fact that we came out of there and our girls turned out to be kind and smart and thoughtful and respectful and treat everybody with, you know, grace and love, that's something that we're really, really proud of.
And you should be, Matt. You know, I've actually seen it firsthand. I mean,
yeah, you know, nothing like home training, even when the home's the White House.
I mean, yeah. Hey, listen, man, we will. The Promised Land, this book, it addresses a lot of the challenges that our country's faced over the last 4 years. But you talk about this in your book and you provide insight on how we can move forward as a country and restore our faith in the power of democracy. What give us just briefly some of the stuff that we can look for in this book about this country.
Well, look, And Steve, I'm going to have to run after this, but the reason I call it a promised land is just like, you know, the story of Exodus, just like Dr. King spoke about before he was shot. Yeah, we might not get there, but each generation, we've got our struggles to make this a more perfect union, to make it more free, more just. You know, we stand on the shoulders of folks like my dear friend who departed, John Lewis, this year.
Yes.
And what I try to describe in the book is that our politics in this country are as divided as any time in my lifetime.
Mm.
But beneath the surface, people still have a lot in common. Mm. Folks still have hopes, dreams. You know, there's a reason why I won Iowa, where it's 98% white.
Mm-hmm.
It's because people saw that I was listening to them and heard them when they described, you know, their worries about losing a job or not having health care or their kids moving away because there weren't any opportunities in their small town or you know, worrying whether they could retire or not. And those were the same worries I was hearing in the South Side of Chicago, you know, in a barrio in L.A. And where I put my faith, and hopefully if people read the book, they get a sense of this. For all the things that divide us, we still have a lot in common, but it's just there's a lot of forces that make it hard for us to realize those common aspirations. You know, we got politicians who sow division instead of trying to bring people together. We've got a media that knows conflict sells and so tries to get people angry all the time instead of give people information. Let's face it, the legacy of racism in this country that still can be tapped in by unscrupulous politicians. And we can't just think, okay, we elected Barack or now we elected Joe and Kamala, and they'll fix stuff. Stuff gets fixed because folks are paying attention.
That's right.
And, you know, even if you've got a good president, that good president still needs voters who are allies to put pressure on other politicians to make sure that stuff actually gets done. And it's that idea of activism, even if you're not a politician. The idea that you take some responsibility for your community and for future generations, that's more than anything what I want people to take away from this book after they've read it. That you have power, you just have to use it.
Wow. Well, sir, I just want to say we miss you, man. Please give Michelle our love. We love you, brother. Thank you for everything you did for this nation. You set a mark that it just can't be gotten to, but we appreciate everything you did, brother, for real.
Thank you so much, and everybody stay safe. We've got more work to do. Everybody's got to take this pandemic seriously. I hope everybody has a safe and joyful holiday season.
Thank you, Mr. President. Hey, give Michelle and the kids our love, man, and you stay safe also, brother.
You're listening to the Steve Harvey Morning Show.
Tim and Bob.